Oh, thank you. I've been in front of most of you for like a couple of years. I'm still just nervous as heck. But I dressed up in my Beatles tie, which my good friend Joe S. sent to me when I first joined this group. So I'm safe and protected by the Beatle tie and, of course, God and God that in person. Anyway, so the earliest I can remember being a irregular eater at the time was when I was about 4 or 5. My earliest memories were going back to taking my grandmother and grandfather. My father and I were taking my grandmother and grandfather from Idaho, where I still live, back to Indiana, where they where they wanted to go to live out their remaining years. And we drove them back there, and I don't remember anything about that. And I discovered two things in Indiana. I'm going to mention food just briefly here, so if anybody's offended by that, you can mute for just like 30 seconds. I discovered fireflies, which were absolutely fascinating to like a 4-year-old, and peanut butter and butter sandwiches that my grandmother made in bulk. I mean, a lot. And they must have been like that thick, or they probably weren't, but to me, they seemed like, and I loved those, and I started eating them. And we were, I don't know how long we were there, probably a week or so. And on the way back, we took the train, which was still a popular form of transportation at the time. And she made like a bag, like a leather satchel type bag full of them for me. And I'm sure I ate them. I remember coming home, my dad and my mother looking at me and going, "Oh my God, he's fat." And I don't think she meant any offense by it, but it just took her by total shock. I put on so much weight while I was gone. And that kind of started me on the path. Kind of helped, it defined me. It's a fat kid. And I know through school, I developed a sense of humor, I God-given probably, to kind of deflect and defend myself and kind of define myself subconsciously, of course, as something other than the fat kid. And they got me in and out of trouble throughout a class a couple of times. And I had a pretty good childhood, I really did. And my mother and father both worked hard and that give us a pretty good life. And of course, when I hit puberty and all that, it was even doubly conscious of what I looked like. I had a girlfriend, my first real girlfriend, when I was in 9th grade, and that was nice, and then I wasn't really very big at that time. I was just kind of a fledgling compulsive overeater, just in training. And she moved back to Pennsylvania from Idaho, and that's about the time that my weight started becoming more and more of a problem. And it was about that same time that my mother sent me to a diet doctor. And I go down there, drive down there. It's probably 6 in the morning before school, and they'd give appetite suppressants, which were pretty potent at that time. And you're supposed to take one in the morning, one at night, and give you a shot in the arm. For 5 days a week, I got a shot in the arm, and I started. I took the first day. I took the appetite suppressants. I was like, felt pretty good. I felt awake. And they were turned, they were amphetamines, and I take one in the afternoon, and that felt pretty good. And I don't know how long it took, but I started taking, two or three, or eventually I think I got up to 5 or 6 a day, and I'd go back to the doctor's office, and he would give me more, even though it was clear that I was taking more than I should, and then eventually switch me to something stronger. So that was the beginning of my, it's probably 15 years I was addicted to amphetamines. And during all this time, and the weight started coming off. I got down to, I was probably 210, got down to about 170 or something like that. And And I started, I have an addictive personality, so I started drinking about that time. And I'd been playing drums since I was probably in ninth grade or something like that. And I got in a band, and that was great fun. And I was, it was great. It was fun. It was great fun. But I went to the doctor's office one morning, and the sign on the door said closed. Doctor passed away over the weekend, which was not good news for me. And so I could get speed anywhere I wanted. But that after that, it was just kind of, I played drums, and I got finally started playing in bands, and went on the road with a band, just clubs, not big concert halls or anything. And every time we go out, I get enough speed to get me through the thing. And one time we were getting ready to go out, and there wasn't any. I couldn't find any. And so I didn't have any choice, but I had to go. And that's how I detoxed from speed. And of course, I was drinking my rear end off too. But that was the last time. That was when the speed thing became not a problem, out of force. But I drank a lot. This disease goes in all sorts of directions. I'm a recovered alcoholic also. But I'd always come back home to the food, no matter where I was, no matter what I was doing, that food, the food kept getting worse. I would put on more and more weight. And I got married when I was, I think I was 32, to a nice lady who already had three kids. So I had a ready-made family, and we had one we built from a kit. And it was stressful, and I was domineering and controlling. I could be really kind and nice. It talks about this in the big book when the situation called for it, and I could assert my self-will at the drop of a hat when it wasn't, when I was driven to control. And that lasted for about 10 years, and I got I divorced her because she was my problem. Got our son, moved back to, or moved into an apartment. And I was driving a school bus at that time, and involved, I started taking speed again to kind of get things going. When I came to a point where it was becoming difficult to move on, the weight kept coming on. And I'd been going to psychiatrists and psychologists, and I started taking doctor drugs for depression and anxiety. And, I still drank, I still overate, didn't stop me. But, it got to the point where, I was, going to a psychiatrist, and, I talked to him every week, and he said, well, Dave, one day he says, I want to send you to Salt Lake City for electroconvulsive therapy. And I said, he said, I know what you're thinking, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but it's not like that anymore. And that's a great movie if you've never seen it. And so I got in my car, and on the way home to the house I'd managed to buy, or, promised to buy, I started, just planning out ways to kill myself. And the best one was, I would get plastic and a gun, which I didn't have, and line the inside of the car, and then, blow my brains out. And then it could be cleaned up so my son could still use the car, like he'd want to drive around in a car that his dad killed himself in. That's thinking, I'd been to OA before, and work steps out of the big book 15 years before, and lost some weight, and was figured I was fixed, which I think a lot of people do. And that's what started this whole downhill spiral. And I was, I was in that house, and I couldn't work anymore. And my brother would come over every week, and we'd talk for a while. And one day he goes, I finally said, what would you do if you were me? And he said, let's go back to OA. And we did. And we went to a Saturday morning meeting not too far from my house. And I went in there kind of sheepishly and sat down. And a lady at the end of the table said, that's the man that saved my life. Because I'd sponsored, I was probably the only guy in OA in Boise for quite a while. And so I would, I was the only one working on the Big Book. And they saw the results. So I sponsored several women. And I said, yeah, you know, that was God doing that, not me. But it set me back on the road to recovery. And it's just been miraculous. I've lost over and maintained over 200 pounds. How much time have I got left?
9 minutes.
How many? 9? God, I blew yes. right through. Okay. No. I've met some of the best people in my life, including the woman that my wife, which we've been together for coming up on 13 years this month. Good Lord. And it's the best relationship I've ever had in my life because God's involved with both of us, you know. And I have the tools to take my resentments and my insanity too on a daily basis. I'm still nuts. You know, this is a mental, physical, and spiritual illness, and the mental is really strong in me. But I have the tools, you know, inventory and fifth step and ninth step and all that to take my insanity to God. And that works a lot of the time. Sometimes she still has to hear it, and she puts me in my place, which I appreciate. But it's just, I can't describe the kind of love we have and the kind of love that is nurtured by working the steps, you know. And food's not really an issue for me anymore. I run up against foods once in a while. I go, no, that's got to go. But it's a progressive illness. And I know that if I hadn't got help when I did, that I would have been dead long ago, but I'm not. And the God I have, the higher power I have, is a loving, nurturing, caring God. I think he's patterned after. When they said, you use your own conception, I had thought, you know, like the perfect mother that, you know, will give you advice and even orders sometimes when they're necessary, but will, you know, help tend to your wounds and love you. And that's been, I don't have the evil vindictive God. I don't know why bad things happen to good people. I don't know why there are floods or hurricanes or God forbid wars, but I know that this God takes care of me and loves me so I can help other people. And that's, I can't put it into words. And it gets better and stronger, that connection, every day, as long as I'm doing the work. And above all, I'm getting to meetings with the idea, not because, oh, I need a meeting, and I do sometimes, and I say that, but the idea of passing this on to people that suffer like I've suffered, and like a lot of us have suffered, is a dangerous, powerful, progressive disease. And I remember my sponsor telling me, you know, that means the amount of control you have over your food today is the most control you're going to have for the rest of your life. If you're a compulsive overeater, it's going to get worse. And it just makes it doubly incredible that I've lost over 200 pounds and kept it off over these years with all the stuff I've gone through and all the insanity. But the last thing I'd like to say is that the people in this meeting are just wonderful. I feel like they're my second family, and you know, so many of you I just care for, and I love you so very much. And you know, thanks for letting me in when I came in and making me feel at home, and just being there. And every day, no matter what I'm doing, not every day, I can't make it every day, but no matter what I'm doing, whether I feel like it or not, I get on this meeting, and I join my family in helping others. And it's, you know, other than
5 minutes.
Thank you. Boy, am I killing time. Other than you know, my wife and our lovely dog who's laying on the couch being old. You guys are my second family. And I can feel the love and the power of God every time I come into this meeting. And, you know, whatever your conception is of God, don't give up. Or if you don't want to use the word God, it doesn't matter. It just has to be something greater than yourself, something with some power, because, you know, I didn't have it. And anyway, I think I'll just shut up from here and we'll move along.